Christopher Media, the Weedsman Podcast.
Cures rickets, polio, conjunctivitis,
AIDS.
AIDS.
Let's just go hog wild.
Begin the car accident, you just use a little bit and you'll be fine.
Yeah, rub it on your car and yourself. It'll fix your car and your bones.
Try this special trick to get out of traffic tickets with Rick Simpson oil.
Rub it on the cop. He'll just go away.
The Weedsman Podcast. Every Friday on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.
Hi, I'm Mike White.
And I'm Rob St. Mary.
And we're the hosts of the Projection Booth Podcast.
If you haven't heard of the Projection Booth, that's okay.
But we think it's time that you have.
We've been doing this for over 3 years now.
And we think we're doing a pretty good show.
Every week we look at a different film and put it in context.
We try to bring you interviews with the people behind the films.
Or experts on a subject matter covered in the film.
We don't specialize in any one particular genre or type of film.
We try to examine every aspect of cinema.
From every corner of the globe.
Even at 3 years, we barely just scratched the surface.
But we're ready. We're ready for you to listen to us.
That's right. Now's the time to give us a shot.
Download us through our free smartphone app.
Or through Stitcher, iTunes, Geek Juice Radio, Jackalope.
Or our website.
Projection-booth.com.
We'll keep making great shows.
Now it's your turn to listen.
Christopher Media. Let's make some noise. From AsmaCore Studios near Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, man.
It's the Weedsman Podcast.
I have no idea what's going on.
And now?
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Here are the Weedsmen.
You want to get high?
Already did.
Yep, already did.
Hello.
Hi.
This is another episode of the Weedsman Podcast. I am Chris.
I am Rob.
I'm Aaron.
And we are high.
Yeah, we already started.
With the headband.
That headband.
Do you feel like you're wearing a headband yet? You're supposed to.
I feel like I'm wearing one.
It's part of the mythological stuff. I don't know. Mythology. There you go. It's been a long day.
It's a body buzz type of weed.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's good for my back pain, which is what I'm really thankful for when it comes to marijuana.
Yeah, I notice it gets you at that point where you're just, you know, almost like phased out, but it also takes away that pain just the right amount.
Yeah, my back has been killing me this week.
Mine too.
And again, I don't like taking painkillers. Rather just lay down on the couch, maybe put some ice on it, and smoke a joint.
Yeah, I think that's the best way.
Yeah, the night that, I think it was last week when we did this afterwards, Chris gave me some of that tincture, and that shit gives you a real body buzz.
I think for legal purposes, I have to say I shared it with you.
Yes. Yep.
What? Oh, yeah.
We have to be careful with the language on that.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, you let me have a couple drops of it, and that made my back pain lower. Well, that on top of all the weed that we had smoked previous to that
right.
During the episode. Later on, we're going to be talking to Ricardo Baca. He's the he's the chief editor.
The marijuana editor.
Yeah.
At the Denver Post. You might also know him as The Cannabist.
At cannabist.co. And he's going to tell us about his new movie that he's in, Rolling Papers, which...
Yeah, they followed him and his writers around for a year. The first year of the end of Prohibition. Amendment 64.
Yeah.
As we learned that it was called.
Yep, so we'll be playing that in a little bit here. We had a great talk with him. Excellent guy.
Today's strain.
We mentioned it. We are smoking the headband.
Yes, the headband.
Named so because it feels like it's putting a very soft vice, but a vice nonetheless, around your head.
It's a hybrid strain, actually. Found that out. I thought it was a indica strain.
Yeah?
No, but that's another cool thing. And shout out Nature's Alternative to New Dispensary. Man, it's... I don't know, man. I might have a new favorite place, but they label the percents, like their stuff is lab tested. So yeah, this one's a straight 50-50 down the middle, son.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Our description comes from Reliefly today. Meet Headband, the love child of cannabis powers, couple OG Kush and Sour Diesel. The smooth.
Those two babies fucked.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
Those are two to get down, man.
I'm trying to remember what movie that's from. Oh, is that Pineapple Express?
Yeah.
These two got down. This is their child. All right. Well, they said the smooth, creamy smoke is accented by flavors of lemon and diesel, while long-lasting effects are great for pain relief.
That's hoping tasty,
you
man.
To relax and to combat elevated stress levels.
Yeah. Is this the first time tonight we're smoking this?
Yes.
So before we were just smoking on that kosher kush from last
week.
Yeah,
we had what was left over from that.
Ah, I gotcha. So this will be my first taste of it.
Wow. That's nice.
That's tasty burger, man.
Well, many report that the effects create a slight pressure around the crown of their head and feels as though they're wearing a headband. The effects have been known to come on slow, so pace yourself with this potent hybrid.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever smoked headband, actually, but I've gotten that feeling of like the pressure around the head before from other strains.
I've had it before.
I think they could. I understand headband's a great name for it, but I would have preferred that this strain had been called the King's Kush, because then you imagine that you're wearing a crown and not a headband, right?
It is true. I like that name better.
Yeah,
well, King's Kush does exist.
If you get
just wasn't for this,
right? Yeah. But, you know, if you imagine that you're getting really high and that you're wearing a crown on your head, that's better than thinking that you're sitting there. What are you, like, a retired tennis player?
Right.
Why are you wearing
Pete
a headband?
Sampras?
Right.
I'd rather play this than that song that was on before.
Yeah, that other song. Yeah, this is good.
Hey. I was getting down with some
Diana,
oldies
can you
earlier.
Work in Sour Diesel and OG Kush in the lyrics, please?
Yeah, that would be good.
So got this smoke track.
Yep.
So as this is me growing up, teenager, coming of age, discovering music and reefer at the same time. Dude, fucking this song, dude, is fucking super badass in my opinion.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you may not be a fan. But to most people, I don't even have to say who the fuck this is.
I'm not a fan, but I know what it is. You down,
I'm going to like, this was just one to just...
I believe it was...
Turn up and just fucking just let it go, you know? Like, just enjoy the ride.
I think this was one of the first uses of the Mellotron as an instrument.
Really?
Those flutes in the beginning... That part, mm-hmm. You know, the one that's in, well, it's in my left ear. I don't know if you guys have your headphones on. Yeah.
No, yeah, because it's how it's mixed. Yeah.
Well, you could have your headphones on backwards.
Hello.
So the flutes that are coming out of the left side are like,
yeah, you're
sampled.
Right, because I remember watching the anthology. And they have a keyboard called
the Mellotron, and it has each key is attached to a little tape loop, and you hit the key. And it plays a little tape loop. So you want to hear a flute in C, you hit the C key, and it plays that little tape loop. So you have the full range of the keyboard. It's basically what I do in my studio here with samples. I have all these string samples that I can put together and make it sound like real string arrangements. This was the first version of that. And one of a number of ways where the Beatles were pushing the technology. They were studio heads, man. That's why they didn't want to go on tour. They were like, you see the fucking shit we're getting done in the studio?
Yeah.
Fuck going out and getting mobbed by these screaming girls and playing for people who can't even fucking hear us. Right. Like, we are working.
Yeah.
Okay? We are breaking new ground. We are taking these four tracks and chaining them together to make these epics. These 24-track recordings that were impossible previous because nobody had even fucking thought of it.
Yeah, like, George Martin, I don't think gets the fucking props he should get for what he did.
The Beatles would not be the Beatles that we understand them today. Like, would not have been a groundbreaking if it wasn't for his input.
You talk about the fifth Beatle, it's George Martin.
Yeah. It's not that guy who plays keyboard, was it? Not that he's not a... He's a really, really
it's
great...
Not, it's not Brian Epstein.
No, not him.
No, but I'm saying, as far as fifth Beatles go...
Yeah.
Like, the real fifth Beatles, George Martin.
Absolutely.
And it is so killing me to talk over the song, but I mean, it is what it is. We're a podcast.
But yeah, that's what it... This isn't necessarily one of my favorite Beatles songs, but it's one that
it's like,
is technology-wise, it fascinates me.
As far as Ringo's drum, like everybody, you know, his pinnacle is the drum solo on Abbey Road. No way. To me, it's this song.
Right.
He sounds like a herd of fucking elephants.
He does, and he seems, his time slips. Like, he's constantly rushing and pulling back, but it's... I'm not criticizing. It's perfect. It's, again...
It's what the song needed.
Right.
That's why he was a good drummer. He's not the most technical drummer. Ringo always did what the song needed.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it was just 2-4.
Yes.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, other bands were like, well, we're going to make this long jam. And bands in, like, garage bands in the 60s and bands in the 70s were like... Oh, we got to put a bridge in here and we'll do this crazy solo. And then, we'll have this part of the show where the drummer has his solo. And they're like, no, we're doing all this. We're changing from song to song within one song. We're, changing the key and the rhythm completely or playing with arrangements and stuff like that. They didn't need to have, like, a drum breakdown in the middle of the song. They're like, it's a whole nother song 2 minutes later.
Yeah. Ready? Coming. Infamous part in Beatles lore.
It's awesome, wasn't it?
I forget which one this is.
Cranberry sauce. Or Iberry Paul.
Iberry Paul.
If you get
Paul.
Into the Paul.
Yeah.
The Paul. What do they call it now? The Paul Truther movement?
Right.
All right, kids. It's time.
Yeah, we're going to listen to our interview with Ricardo Baca.
The cannabis marijuana editor, Denver Post.
And he's going to tell us about his movie, Rolling Papers, that's going to be debuting at the South by Southwest Festival this weekend.
It's Sunday. Sunday, Sunday.
Sunday.
Check it out.
We are being joined by Ricardo Baca, but you also might know him as the Cannabist. We use his resources every week here on The Weedsman. He has kindly carved out a little bit of his day to talk to us. He's a subject of a movie called Rolling Papers, independent film. It's you and your crew, right, Ricardo? Not just you, or does it focus centrally on you?
Yeah, it does. It does. I think they call me the central character, which is a really weird phrase, but I guess documentary films, even though they're based on real life, need characters too. So mm-hmm. I think the focus, and then it also follows some of my colleagues who are full-time staff writers and editors at the Post. And others who are freelancers of mine at The Cannabist.
I was just going to tell people where they could find some more information on the movie if they wanted to. RollingPapersFilm.com. And you can see that it's actually premiering at the South by Southwest Film Festival, right?
Yeah, it's debuting next weekend. So the exact date on that would be March 15th.
Right.
We just did the poster for the documentary at The Cannabist, which is thecannabist.co.
At Cannabist on Twitter, too. You can also follow them. Now, is this going to be, is this just film festivals? Is it going to get some kind of independent release, like in the art house type movie theaters, or?
This is completely an independent project from the Post, so we have nothing to do with it, which I think is the way these things should be done. But what the film team has told me, that they hope to play a couple film festivals, they hope to get their right eyes on it, and then their ultimate goal is to find distribution, so then it will have an opportunity for a wider release.
Well,
so you are the first ever marijuana editor of any newspaper, really, or of anything outside of, like, the typical publications, the High Times, things like that. I mean, how did you fall into this? I mean, I read your background, you're a music critic, you were a music critic and entertainment editor, stuff like that. I mean, stereotypically, did they come to you first? Like, hey, music guy, you want to be the marijuana editor? Or, just how did this all come about?
I think there was a little bit of that in there. They certainly said, we knew Ricardo was familiar with this kind of territory. But even when they did approach me, I kind of told them. I was like, I'm not the biggest stoner in the newsroom, right? And they're like, oh, we know that, and that's part of the other reason we're coming to you. but it kind of comes down to some of the stuff I've done at the Post over the years. I've been fortunate enough to be at the same paper for 13 years, and in that time I started a music festival, which has become pretty successful. It's called the UMS.
Yeah, I was reading about that. I saw that there was going to be a Mark Mothersbaugh show coming up.
Yes. Oh, very good. Yeah, you definitely have been. Yeah, at the Museum of Contemporary Art here in Denver, the UMS is presenting a big Mark Mothersbaugh party with some other bands, including tennis and some other stuff going on. But yeah, Mothersbaugh's exhibit Myopia opened here at the MCA, and it has a national tour after this. I think 8 or 10 dates at museums throughout the world. But yeah, so I started the festival, and I started a music blog called Reverb, and I think they just looked at me as somebody who wasn't afraid to start from scratch and kind of create something from nothing.
Now, to be on your team, is it required that they smoke, or... Because I know the blurb on the website said that most of your writers are straight-laced.
You know, most of our staff writers are straight-laced. Yeah, you know, just by the very nature of the beast, you're talking about people who have been working for a daily newspaper for years.
Right.
And so most of them are. But I would say the majority of my freelancers are proud donors, but within the context of what they do for the cannabis, they are, you know, advice columnists, or their parenting columnists, or their pot critics, or their gear critics reviewing vape pens and glass and such.
So have you seen any, like, pushback as far, or any hostility maybe towards you, the paper, your writers? You know, I mean, because there's a...
You must get the occasional angry letter.
Oh, man, of course. You know, the cannabis has been going now for about 14 months.
Mm-hmm.
We have encountered... You know, I mean, lots of anger and lots of misunderstanding.
Right.
Whether it's Bill O'Reilly bitching me out on his show.
Ooh, like really?
Times last year. Or, you know, other people who claim that we're promoting pot. You know, I just always tell all of these people, you know, clearly you've not spent much time on the site, because if you did, if you thumb through those pages, yeah, you might not be pleased. There is a daily newspaper behind hiring a pot critic, but read those reviews, and they're very responsibly written, and read the news, and it's journalistic in quality and intent, and, you know, and for the people who actually do follow up on that, I'm certain that they do see that this is a legitimate journalistic endeavor. And as my boss, Greg Moore, the editor of the Post, says, you know, we'd be crazy if we weren't covering marijuana from all elements. And was his idea when he hired me. He was like, now I assume that you're going to be hiring maybe a pot critic, maybe two, and he has been such a support and a driving force in this, expecting us to really cover all angles.
Yeah, because you guys don't, the paper doesn't promote pot. You're documenting something that's historical going on. This is, I mean, Colorado being the first state to legalize marijuana, and you being the first paper to exclusively tackle that issue. And you're very fair in your reporting on that.
Yeah, you know, we try and be. And you come across issues and all of that stuff, because I think the primary stuff that marijuana aficionados want to read about are things about legalization and how it's working, and, you know, the things about scientific studies and what we're discovering about cannabinoids and their relationship with our bodies and our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we will still post studies that aren't necessarily flattering toward marijuana. You know, for example, a prominent study that came out of the UK 2 weeks ago, you know, and it kind of pointed toward, you know, more regular heavy dosage use could possibly lead to more psychosis than if you were using a low percentage weed. And, you know, gosh, we don't know. We're not scientists. We're just reporting on this stuff as best as we can, using our own, you know, our own journalistic wits and the wire services that we have at our availability, which include, you know, the Washington Post and High Times, and, you know,
yeah.
And I love that our partners are as varied as the Washington Post and High Times.
Well, it's yeah. I mean, we kind of do the same thing. I mean, we definitely have fun with it, but we try to make sure that we're being informative as well. You have to report the good with the bad, and that's what you guys do as well.
Yeah. Absolutely, I think it's important. If you don't do that, then you inevitably lose a certain amount of credibility.
Right. Well, getting back to the documentary, so this documentary is following you and your crew, which in turn are documenting essentially the legalization of marijuana in Colorado, right?
Right, exactly. It's basically about me and my colleagues at work, and then also my freelancers who kind of freelance for the cannabis straight up, and who I wish I could pay more, but they're paid basically on a per article or per critique basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we just saw the film for the very first time about a week ago, and it's while it was a very bizarre situation, finding yourself in a movie theater watching you and your friends and colleagues on a big screen, I can say for sure that it offers a lot of insight into just how bizarre it's been, and it's how bizarre it's been to be inside Colorado during historic and absolutely strange time.
Yeah, I went last April, and it was just, it seemed the whole time I was there, it seemed just like, it was surreal.
Good. Did you come for 420, the rally and the cup and everything?
I came right after. I came literally, I think, 2 days after.
You were late.
I went out for my birthday's April 24th, so I went out there for my birthday. I got a friend that stays out in Aspen, too. But it was funny because I was going to, I tried to do the Freedom Trail.
Sure.
And I was trying to get all of the strains that were recommended, and it was funny just going around to all the shops and just being told that they were out because, 420 was 2 days ago. But I got my medical card in Michigan. It's still just even a surreal experience. Every time I go, I've gone a bunch of times now. It's still just a surreal experience. Just like I essentially just went to the pot store. It's like stuff we all talked about when we were like 15 years old, 16 years old or whatever in high school, sitting around and getting stoned. Man, wouldn't it be great if we could, and now it's here and it's crazy.
What was most surprising for you coming to Colorado for the first time after those legal recreational sales had started?
Just the, how free it all of it just, it seemed like a different world. Like all, it was all of a sudden accepted, and you could just see like this culture brimming, just going around to all the shops and things like that. It was, just how relaxed everything seemed to be. And, when we went to Aspen, town that has, my buddy, he lives there, says, has 6,000 people, during the spring, summer, and fall. And in the winter, has 20,000. But still, the place has got six shops. They're all high end. I remember one thing that struck me was the all walks of life you were seeing in these places. You were seeing people you thought, if you saw them on the street, that you would never pin him as a stoner, and then you were seeing your stereotypical, dreadlock having, tie-dye shirt wearing people too. It just, that's what I think really struck me, was just how you saw all walks of life going in and out of those places.
And that was the thing. I mean, when we were covering January 1st, I remember waking up that morning with a slight hangover from the previous night, which of course was New Year's Eve, and I'm like, crap, I got to get started. I got to get to work. And I went to a couple shops, and we're seeing lines of 200, 300, 400 people just stretching around the block, peaceful, happy, cold, talking amongst each other. But what struck me that morning as well was just that vast diversity. It's not only dudes, and it's not only young people. It was people of all ages. It was men and women, and there was a certain camaraderie there. Of course, something very special was happening, but it was just, I think it was hilarious that so many police and public officials in Colorado were so surprised that it ended up being such a peaceful outing and such a calm day, and people weren't lighting up in the streets just despite the public consumption laws here, which, of course, that's not allowed. People were respecting the law and getting along, and there were zero problems, and then come January 2nd, 2014, there were multiple local politicians, from state legislators to city council members, who really did kind of change their tune. And they're like, we think this might be possible. Okay, I think we're ready to try this.
Yeah, my friend in Aspen works for public radio out there, and he showed me a story about the mayor going around wishing all of these businesses good luck. Yeah. Which, that's crazy to me. That's something just you don't think you'd ever would have seen. You think the mayor, that would be, the law enforcement people would be so dead set against it. But it seems like it's been well received. Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Well, Ricardo, I wanted to ask you, Colorado being like the spearhead of this movement, essentially on the forefront of legal marijuana, there's been some unexpected results from it. What do you think is the strangest thing unexpected result or side effect or repercussion from this movement?
Well, I think, it kind of comes down to one of the biggest stories of last year, and I know a lot of people are tired of talking about edibles, but yeah. I think Colorado did learn a very important lesson in 2014, and I think that lesson that we learned will benefit every single entity that then legalizes it in the future. You know, states like New York that'll have no flower for sale, it's only going to be oil and edibles,
right.
Or, you know, full-on states that kind of legalize everything, like what Nevada will most likely do in 2016. You know, I think they'll all learn from that and just take necessary steps before it ever hits the shelves to make sure that certain things are in line to help, you know, primarily adults from being too stupid and not reading the label,
right,
and not taking too much and therefore not freaking out.
Right, because I read a story that, I don't know if this has happened already, but I heard that they were regulating the edibles more, controlling the dosage, not making them so intense.
They did, yeah. That happened on February 1st, so that regulation took hold then. And what happened before that was interesting. In the days leading up to it, you had all of these shops with inventory of edibles that were about to be illegal to sell. Right. So they had a fire sale at the end of January, got rid of all those, and now all the edibles on the shelves for the last, you know, 5 weeks have really been this new, Colorado Edible 2.0, which means they're, you know, they will never be more than 100 milligrams on the recreational side, and that was already in place, but now they're single serving, you know, they're either wrapped in single serving, or if it's like a chocolate bar, it's demarcated for a very easy break for a single serving, which the state defines as 10 milligrams of activated THC. Yeah. And so I think those changes in regulations were very smart, and the industry was 100% on board with them. It cost them millions of dollars to adhere to them and change packaging and change their molds, change their, you know, everything. But everybody agreed that it was a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Even as a consumer, it's better to be able to know what you're taking and to be able to control your dose. Same as if you buy a beer, you buy a high-strength beer, you go, oh, maybe I'll only have a couple of them.
It's true.
You really need more than 100 milligrams, really.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what night it is.
So high dosage folks, especially patients, you know, I've talked to people who take 300 milligram edibles multiple times a day for their ailments and also tolerances, because they've probably been getting high for decades and now this is just where their dose is. But you know, those people are ideally buying medically, and none of those regulations that I just spoke about have to do with medical marijuana in Colorado. That's only recreational.
Right.
So I want to, all right. You're probably the guy to ask about this. When I was there, there was all this talk that on October 1st last year, medical marijuana was going to go away in Colorado. Apparently it hasn't. Are there any plans for them to phase it out now that it's recreational, or no?
You know, there are certain people who want that to happen. The changes that happened on October 1st were, they had more to do with how the shops operate. You know, basically October 1st got rid of vertical integration, where the shops and the cultivations, the grows, had to be linked. And now those two entities no longer need to be linked. But yeah, as of now, there is some pretty mellow legislature going on right now, or legislation in the legislature, with people talking about the medical system and seeing, you know, do we need to rework it? Does it still have a purpose? And there are definitely state lawmakers out there who don't think that medical marijuana has a purpose in a state where you have legal recreational. I don't necessarily have an opinion on the issue since I've been reporting on it, but it is fascinating. And certainly the caregiver system and some of the more unregulated, unlicensed grows are looking at tighter restrictions in the coming, you know, in the coming months, to be sure. I don't think medical marijuana is going away this year in Colorado, although I do wonder about its future in the next 5 years.
Yeah, because I remember the shops were they're divided into, you had your rec side, you had your medical side. It seemed like the medical side was cheaper as well, but, you know, it's
taxed less than the recreational, right?
Yeah, so both of those statements are correct. You know, if you're buying medical marijuana, it's about one-third to one-half less than what the recreational product costs on the shelf next to it, you know? So seriously, if you're buying a joint medically, oftentimes it's a $5 joint. If you're buying a joint recreationally, it's a $10 joint. So it is a 50% difference there.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
And as well, when you add the crazy taxes, which some people are say are a lot too much, and others, including Harvard-educated and Harvard-teaching economists, say are just about right, you know, they are significantly more on rec weed than it is medical.
Well, speaking of the taxes on that, this has been an issue that apparently there is too much tax money collected. Could you clarify this for us? Because I heard one report on NPR that said that all the total of the tax collected on recreational marijuana was being refunded back to the taxpayers in some form because they overshot their goal. How does that work?
You know, that was unfortunately some pretty irresponsible reporting by a number of people.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it didn't sound right.
No, it's so far from right. And so the very basics are, it comes down to something within the Colorado Constitution called TABOR, and that stands for the Taxpayer Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Been in there for a while, and we actually broke the news, me and a colleague, that the state was looking at having to give a refund, and that refund was somewhat related to the money and taxes made by marijuana, but at the same time, for the most part, it had very little to do with it. And then as soon as that story got picked up, and it doesn't help that this Taxpayer Bill of Rights, TABOR, is very difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Number of media outlets wrote, you know, really irresponsible headlines that were completely incorrect, that said things like, Colorado's making so much money on marijuana that now the state has to give the money back. And that was absolutely never the case. In fact, Colorado, even though it made, you know, 70 plus million in taxes from marijuana last year and more than 700 million in sales on recreational and medical last year, still underneath what the state government's initial you know, estimates were. They were trying to sell more and to make more on taxes.
Right. Come on, stoners, let's go.
Yeah, because we were seeing actual numbers in some reports, anywhere from $7 to like $16 per taxpayer that they were going to apparently reform. Like, where are you getting these numbers from?
Right. And they have kind of, they've owned it, you know. I think in the couple months of the year, they knew that the actual numbers were going to be significantly lower than the estimates. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper and his entire office, including his budgetary staff, just came out and said, you know what, we are off, and we had no idea what to estimate because we were kind of guessing in the dark because this has never been done in the modern world. And I think for the most part, people understood that.
Yeah.
What do you think about the governor's stance that he thinks it shouldn't be legal? That he thinks that the citizens made a mistake?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's been a fascinating evolution to watch Hickenlooper's relationship with this issue, you know, because it was very contentious during the election up until November 2012 when Amendment 64 passed in Colorado. And then there was a full 13 months of regulations, writing all of the laws that are relevant to this issue before actual implementation. And of course, many national interviews with Hickenlooper saying lots of things, but you know, last year was an interesting one because he kind of started the year saying, I'm still not a fan of this, but this is what the people want and this is my job to implement it. And then he kind of morphed into kind of a darker space when he said that this was reckless. This was a reckless move of Colorado voters to do this. And he kind of ended the year by saying, you know what, looking back, looking at how we've done this, I do think it's possible to regulate marijuana legally in modern day America. And I think, you know, I don't have any problem with the governor being super cautious, especially given his, I mean, it's not the easiest position to be in, you know, especially when you look at him going to all of these governors associations meetings all over the country and talking with others. And they're like, what should we do? Our people want this too. And he's just telling them, you should wait and see and you know, see what happens with us. We are the guinea pig in this. It's kind of an unenviable situation.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of entertaining to listen to politicians dance around the issue. They don't want to land on either side solidly.
I know, and gosh, it's more relevant now than it has been.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah, I mean, maybe ever. I mean, this 2016 election is huge, and as you guys have seen and most likely talked about on this program, everybody is talking about this issue now, and all of the Republican candidates are kind of coming in line, and it's been fascinating couple of weeks to watch them say, yes, if elected, we are going to let those states conduct those experiments, even though many of them, including Cruz, including Jeb Bush, have kind of ridiculed the way Obama has handled Washington and Colorado and soon D.C., Alaska, Oregon.
What about the lawsuits that are popping up now? I saw there's yet another one that was filed by a group of Colorado sheriffs against the state.
Oh, it's amazing, right? Four lawsuits now. Yeah, you're right, exactly right. Yesterday, the fourth lawsuit was filed against the state of Colorado, naming Governor Hickenlooper as its sole defendant.
Oh, really?
These are six sheriffs in Colorado, a couple sheriffs in Kansas, Nebraska, and some other officers. But, you know, it's fascinating. I think what you're seeing is a lot of national or international anti-drug or anti-legalization outfits trying to figure out a way into this conversation. And they also want to stop this conversation. And so they're going after these people who have spoken up about it in the public. So they know that the sheriff of Larimer County, which includes Fort Collins, has spoken out against marijuana being legal. And so they got in contact with him, and he introduced them to others. And next thing you know, you have this very influential group coming after the state, even though they're employees inside the state. And it's absolutely fascinating. But one of the first things I did yesterday after we got the initial breaking news up of that fourth lawsuit, I thought to myself, I'm like, what's going on? Is this how all of Colorado's sheriffs feel? Because these sheriffs that were in Washington, D.C. yesterday for the press conference, they spoke about how they feel torn between two masters. You know, they're supposed to lawfully abide the U.S. Constitution and the Colorado Constitution, and they disagree on this issue, and this is what they want the U.S. District Court to figure out. And so I called a sheriff who's in southwestern Colorado, and he's spoken pretty positively on marijuana in terms of its actual implementation, and he hates the way the laws are in Colorado, so there's the good, the bad for this guy, And I just asked him what he thought about it, and he had the most interesting things to say, and I'll read one of his... This piece is up on the cannabis.co right now. He said, Bill Masters of San Miguel County is his name, and he's the sheriff down there. He said, I don't get it, meaning the lawsuit. Unless I'm missing something, and I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I don't see anywhere in the U.S. Constitution where it requires local elected law enforcement officials to enforce federal law. We don't enforce immigration law. We don't enforce Forest Service or EPA regulations. I don't see why this is such a conflict for these sheriffs. So it's certainly not a universal thing that's felt throughout the state, but it's a contentious issue here still. And we are, you know, more than 14 months after the first legal sale.
Well, do you think anything's going to stop these lawsuits and the banking problems that these businesses have been coming across? Is anything going to stop these problems short of federal legalization, and do you think that would ever happen?
Oh, that is a big question.
Yeah, I know. I saved it for last.
Great question. You know, I think everybody has a good feeling about banking, and yeah. I base my entire opinion off that of my colleague Dave McGoya, who's broken most of the news on this beat for the Denver Post. And he's just done such a kick-ass job, you know, including all of the credit union stuff. I believe we broke that news. It looks like that credit union stands a very good chance of getting its charter. And if it does, then that could sincerely help this industry, because that might open the door for another credit union. But regardless, then these businesses will have a place to go to do all of their banking needs. They can get checking accounts, and they don't have to worry about losing it when they bring in these giant boxes of cash of hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know? So I feel good about that because other people around me feel good about that.
Mm-hmm.
The lawsuits, I think the lawsuits will continue to happen, but eventually we're going to get some sort of precedent. And what, you know, whether that precedent is the U.S. Supreme Court refusing to hear Nebraska and Oklahoma's lawsuit, or the U.S. District Court ruling one way or the other on these other three lawsuits.
Yeah.
Once we have that precedent, good or bad, for the marijuana industry that exists in this state, I don't know that we'll have much guidance there. But everybody is looking toward federal legalization and what's it going to take to get there. And you guys probably know a lot more about this than I do, but this, my general feeling is that there's absolute momentum moving that direction, and that's undeniable, and everybody sees that, regardless of their opinion on the issue. And I do foresee a time in the near future where, at the very least, marijuana will be declassified or rescheduled, and that will change the federal government's relationship with it instantaneously. And I don't know that that's going to happen by the time our next president takes office or within the next couple. But I think that is most likely to be the next step that we see. And, you know, as far as like nationwide legalization, I don't know that we'll ever see that in my lifetime. I just don't anticipate seeing in my lifetime, you know, a Kentucky with legal weed or an Alabama with recreational weed.
Right. Yeah, it was close to getting rescheduled, and then who was that Attorney General, Aaron? He was going to reschedule it, and then
he—I don't know. You're calling. I don't.
He Eric moved on. Eric something. Eric Holder. There we go.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. He was gonna. He was talking about reclassifying it, and then it just died, and now he's no longer the Attorney General. Real quick, Ricardo, let's sneak this in there real quick. Who do you think's next, as far as states go? Like, who do you think are just the slam dunks that are probably going to happen?
Well, I think from what I've been told, there are opportunities for a state or two to possibly go this year. You know, so people are looking at Rhode Island and what's happening there in the legislature, and then I believe it's Vermont as well, right? So that I think those two stand a chance at this year, although that's, you know, it's kind of up in the air. And then 2016, everybody's looking at California, and that I think it can go either way. I mean, people are looking at the momentum happening on a national level right now and saying, well, if Colorado and Alaska could do it, then why wouldn't California? But we need to remember history, and similar movements have happened in California in recent elections and not had the success that they needed to. So California is going to be a very, very tough one, but people feel very confident about Nevada, Arizona, Massachusetts. That's what I hear the most. Nevada, Arizona, Massachusetts, and Nevada is just going to be crazy. And it took me a while to understand why, but I think once that goes, it's going to make the state even more of a circus and even more of a playground.
Yeah.
And more of a showcase, and people will go there for their auto dealer, you know, membership association meetings, and maybe people getting high in a casino with a vaporizer or out front or something and say, hey, is this really as evil as I thought it was?
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely going to make Vegas a lot more interesting. I get to go there once a year for my job, so that'll be fun.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Did you see that Nevada implemented medical reciprocity? So with your MMJ card from any American state, as soon as their medical system is up and running, you can buy legal weed in Nevada with your medical marijuana card.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I've read about reciprocity, and Rhode Island supposedly has it, but it not really. It's they will take any medical card in a dispensary in Rhode Island, but you have to be a Rhode Island resident with a Rhode Island ID to get into.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I mean, it's how they write laws, man. It's how it is. But Michigan is apparently Michigan will take anybody's med card, apparently, from what I've heard.
I've heard that you don't even need a card for some of these places.
Yeah,
in Michigan, well,
that's another story for another day.
Interesting. Some other states do have certain reciprocity requirements, but nobody will be as open as Nevada, because some states are like, okay, we'll accept this state, but not that medical state, and this medical state, but not that one. And then other ones require you to bring an actual doctor's note with your card. But Nevada's like, show up with any card, and you can only use the one dispensary you first sign up with, but then you can keep going back to them for a full month.
That's good to know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that state thrives on tourism.
Absolutely.
Well, all right, yeah. Ricardo, was there anything that you wanted to bring up before we wrap it up?
No, I'm just thrilled to join you guys. You know, it's fun to meet some more people in the community, so thank you for having me on.
No problem. Yeah,
the feeling is mutual, sir. The movie is Rolling Papers, the website rollingpapersfilm.com. It will be premiering at South by Southwest March 15th at Cannabis on Twitter. Is it thecannabis.co or just cannabis.co for the website?
It's thecannabis.co. So, yeah, check it out. And we'll be debuting our new TV show here in the next week, too. It's called The Cannabis Show, so it'll be on.
Sweet. Well, we'll be checking that out.
Next time one of you guys are in Colorado, I'll have you on the TV show.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, that'll probably be Chris. All right. Well, thanks for your time, Ricardo. It was really nice talking to you.
All right, guys. You too.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
If you like what we do and you would like to show your support for us, you can donate to Christopher Media by using the PayPal button on ChristopherMedia.net. Please click through the Amazon banner and bookmark the page. It won't cost you anything extra, and when you buy something, it will help to show your support for Christopher Media. If you're looking to launch your own website, please click through the HostGator banner at ChristopherMedia.net. That's who we use to host all of the Christopher Media shows. When you sign up for HostGator by clicking through our link, you are helping to support ChristopherMedia.net. DraftKings.com, daily fantasy sports leagues, no season-long commitments. You can enter free or paid contests and win your share of over $200 million in prizes. When you click through the DraftKings banner at ChristopherMedia.net, you'll get a free first-time deposit bonus when you sign up for DraftKings.com.
Real quick, what was her name?
Choosing Weeds?
The Weeds, yeah, the Weeds chick. Kind of a one-trick pony now.
God, what's her name? Is it a three-stage name?
Yes.
Mary Louise something or Parker. Something like that.
Yeah.
Mary Louise Parker. Why is this?
Parker.
Parker.
I can't believe that this doesn't, it doesn't sound right. I think it's
that doesn't sound right.
It's the headband.
Yep. It's tightening up around the crown of my head.
Tight on the brain. Anyway, it's time for...
We've got a segment from Rob St. Mary.
Rewind this and just smoke to it.
Well, I also want to put in there, though, that he's from the projectionbooth.com.
Projection-booth.com.
Yep.
Projection-booth.com.
They come out... We say they come out Wednesday. They're really out like Tuesday night-ish. Check it out. The movie, Seconds. I have no idea what it's going to be about. I know there's a movie called 6 Seconds. It was about like bull riding or some shit like that. 8 Seconds. I don't know.
Yeah. That dude from 90210.
Which dude? There was a few of them.
Dylan McKay. Luke Perry.
Yeah.
I know his name. So what?
I think he walks around with an ID. This is Dylan McKay.
Either way, it's not this movie.
Yeah.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium.
Rewind this and just smoke to it.
Welcome to Rewind This and Just Smoke to It. I'm your reviewer, Rob, from the Projection Booth Podcast. Need something new in your life? Tired of that office grind and the wife and the kids? What would you pay for a new life with a new look? This week, I'm talking about Seconds.
Who are Seconds? Where are Seconds? Seconds might be all around you, even now.
This 1966 film from director John Frankenheimer stars John Hamilton as Arthur Rudolph, a schlubby insurance salesman who feels trapped by his respectable life in the suburbs. That's when he gets a call from an old friend, a friend who died a few years ago. At first he thinks it's a joke, but no, it's no joke. His old friend? He's still alive, living under a new name, and he gives Arthur some information on how to meet some folks who will change his life forever. A secret organization known only as the Company.
Did you get the address today?
Yes.
Good. You're to use the name Wilson.
You can't be, Charlie. You just don't come back.
I'm alive. More alive than I've been in the past 25 years. You've got to come tomorrow. Arthur, listen. If you don't show up, that's it. Think for Pete's sake. What have you got now? What?
I don't know.
Tomorrow, just past noon. Remember, use the name Wilson.
After his meeting with the company, Arthur agrees to have his death faked, to get plastic surgery, and to start a new life as an artist. Tony Wilson, played by Rock Hudson. Arthur's new life as Tony is great. It's surf, it's sun, it's ladies. But something seems a little off. Is being a second all it's cracked up to be? Or is there something far more sinister going on?
Oh, Laura!
Shut up, you! Shut up! Shut up, damn you! Just who the hell do you think you are?
Seconds is the third in a series of films from the 1960s by director John Frankenheimer known as the Paranoia Trilogy, along with The Manchurian Candidate and 7 Days in May. When you watch Seconds, you'll get the feeling of that tension. Beyond great performances from both John Hamilton and Rock Hudson, the film looks beautiful, shot in stylish black-and-white photography by the great James Wong Howe, and with a trippy opening credits sequence by the legendary designer Saul Bass.
I can never go back.
Fact is, you really don't want to go back. Six, boy, you owe yourself this thing. Rebirth, life again, begin again, all new, all different, the way you always wanted it. You got another chance. Heck, nobody's gonna miss you, are they?
My wife.
What about her? What are you to her now?
Legend has it that Seconds was such a trip to Beach Boys lead man Brian Wilson, and it freaked him out so badly that it affected him in two key ways. One, it supposedly influenced his aborted album Smile in the late 60s, and two, it reportedly spooked him so badly that he didn't see another film in the theater until the early 1980s. When it was released in 1966, audiences and reviewers really didn't know how to react to Seconds. But to me, the film does feel very modern in some ways and feels like a spiritual godfather to such films as The Game and Fight Club, both by David Fincher.
Seconds. Rock Hudson, as a man who buys for himself a totally new life. A chance to begin again. Every man's dream since time began.
So Seconds is my pick this week for Rewind This and Just Smoke to It. And until next week, I'm Rob from The Projection Booth. You can find out more about my usual show at projection-booth.com. If you have suggestions for films I should review, tweet them at the show. That's at TheWeedsman420. And as Chris, Rob, and Aaron always say, stay high.
No, that sounds insane. Yeah. I definitely haven't seen that movie.
I want to see it now.
I've seen The Manchurian Candidate, though. That's
I've
a freaky-ass movie.
I'm going to make one called
First. Oh, God, the remake was horrible.
Where you don't knock up a chick.
Wait, okay, what was I...
Wait, I delivered that wrong. I'm going to make one called First, where you don't knock up the wrong woman and stay in the wrong marriage. Just don't do either of them.
That's a hell of a title.
So,
I'm living the dream now. That's what I do.
I might have talked over part of it, ranting about Mary Louise Parker. But what exactly was a second? Did he explain that?
It's like the second chance. It was faking your death to start over. Yeah, it was like doing the Pete Hornberg.
Right. Rob, you never watched 30 Rock, did you?
But no.
One of the main characters would make like off the cuff remarks about starting a new life, like finding a body to burn in a car crash so that he could run away to Cancun and live out of the rest of his days on a beach. He's a funny character. Found out also the guy who voiced the Baymax robot in Big Hero 6.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm calling him Pete Hornberg because I don't know his real name. What's his real name, Chris? You know it.
Scott Adsit.
Scott Adsit. Oh, no. We cannot leave today without talking about the rabbits. Did you see this story in Utah?
This kind of made some news all week.
Interesting because in this article, they actually reference and have a picture of the rabbit from The Holy Grail. You know, the one that eek, and like jumps and bites people in the throat.
Yes.
And this is hilarious because I had just read the story today, and right after I read that story, my daughter, she called me on the iPad, and I could hear the movie in the background. She was watching The Holy Grail. She had just put it on.
Okay.
Well, yeah. You're looking at me like I have to finish the story. She was watching. My daughter is 8 years old. I would not expect her to be watching The Holy Grail, but she was, and on the same day that I saw this reference to it. So anyway.
The sharp point.
All right, so it wasn't a great story. But this is a better story.
He's like,
Utah here is of danger of doped crazed rabbits if marijuana is legalized, right? Oh. Who was this fucking idiot? Was it
what's his special?
He's a Stevie Wonder truther.
Yep.
Special Agent Matt Fairbanks. This sounds like a totally made-up name, doesn't it? Expressed some severe concerns. He said, "Now I deal in facts. I deal in science." This is his quote. Deforestation has left marijuana grows with even rabbits that have cultivated a taste for the marijuana. Fairbanks declared.
They got a taste for the reefer.
Right.
Oh,
once they get a taste, they can't get enough.
Wild rabbits.
He describes the story of like clearing out a cannabis farm, and there's rabbits there, and one of them refused to leave us, and we took all the marijuana around him, but his natural instinct to run were somehow gone. This rabbit had eaten so much of the weed that he just couldn't fucking move.
Damn.
Which I guess is possible.
Yeah.
This is in the realm of possibility. I don't doubt that if a rabbit ate a shit ton of marijuana, it would be pretty much comatose. Right. But this is your concern? This is your concern, dude? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a major concern.
And then it'll go up with all the people on Mars that are going to grow weed up there.
God damn it.
We're going to Mars.
Yep.
How are we getting high?
Let's not go back there.
Send the rabbits to Mars. Yeah. They can eat all the weed.
It's not even the rabbits. He's concerned about the squirrels and the dogs and the deer and the monkeys or whatever else they have in Utah that might come across children. And eat some
good
fucking
God,
weed.
Think of the children.
Yes.
Think of the puppies and kittens.
Wow. You nailed it, though. That's exactly what this speech is.
Yeah.
Won't anyone think of the children? Evidently, we hear that it makes rabbits go crazy if it's growing up in Utah in the mountains. So if one of the things we want to do is make sure we don't have any crazed rabbits anymore in Utah and actually bring that into control into the Department of Professional Licensing.
I gotta get the bread of milk. I gotta get the bread of milk. They said snow. I gotta get the bread of milk. Oh, my God. So he's acting like...
Yeah, I agree.
Is this guy trying to get an acting gig or something?
He's trying to get hits.
He's like, you know, there's a lot of business these days with the action movies, especially the superhero movies. Or just people driving around and screaming in cars. I could be that guy.
Won't somebody please think of the children?
I'm really fucking hot.
Yeah, all right. I'm really fucking tired.
Let's cut it.
Stay high.
Let this man sleep.
Stay high.
Stay high.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, liking, and sharing the Weedsman podcast on Facebook. And thanks for all of the new followers on Twitter at TheWeedsman420.
Thanks for the support.
You can subscribe to the Weedsman podcast on iTunes for free by clicking through the iTunes banner at ChristopherMedia.net. Android users You can find this show on Stitcher Radio. I think we've agreed that's the way to go for Android.
It's either Stitcher or the podcast app for the Apple devices. It's the only two I use.
You can now listen to a new episode of A Christopher Media Show every day of the week. Sundays, M&M Question Everything. Monday and Thursday, you have Unregimented. Tuesday, you get the Weedman Podcast Nugget.
The bonus nugget.
Yeah, it's a little extra. And it prepares you for the big show on Friday. Sometimes on Tuesdays, you get the Toddzilla X-Pod. On Wednesdays, you have the Oddcast with Jenna and John. You also have the Projection Booth with soon-to-be-published author,
yes,
Rob St. Mary. Mike White also. He has books on Amazon. Go check them out. Last year, 2014, a lot of big things for the Projection Booth. They were recognized by the AV Club, yeah. Indie,
what was top it? Rated podcast.
IndieWire.com. Check them out on Wednesdays. Saturday, we have the Captain's Table finishing out the week.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.